We're on page Kafchet. I just thought it was a very interesting, how should we say it? It's a subtle Israel-related issue, and it is a related discussion that we don't really think about. To what degree, even before we all got here, do the things that we do, the tzedakah that we gave, and our desire to become part of, was that an expression of our desire to be Zionist, or just like we feel like it's part of a larger community? And I don't think it's more the former than the latter. You know what I'm saying? Like we feel this connection to Israel. We want to be connected to Israel. We want to be, like you said, a part of Israel. Like not necessarily voting. And the only way to do that, really, the only way you could possibly do that is either by visiting, moving here, or giving money. You could pray too, but you know what I'm saying? Those are important things. But prayer is more Klal Yisrael. It's just a very interesting question when it comes to the question of Jewish identity. And obviously these are issues that are discussed, that he discusses at great length in the book. Meaning, what is the core? We discussed this again last week, the core of what Jewish identity is all about. Is an identity just as part of the, you know, Jewish people, the Jewish religion, co-religionists as it were, or more of a national identity? And these are issues that play themselves out in the news all the time. Okay, we're on page Kafchet.
If you're not adhering to it, you're not going to then turn around and say, Israel should say, look, don't feel guilty and give me money, I'm not going to thank
you. To be brutally honest with you, Israel gives much more money than the diaspora community than the other way around now. Think about how much money goes into Birthright, how much the Jewish agency spends on diaspora communities, how much security money from Israel goes. I'm not talking about the American government. I'm talking about how much Israel, the amount of Israel spends on diaspora Jews and how much diaspora Jews spend on Israel. And I wonder which way it goes by now. You know what I'm saying? I think that there's this whole Israel bonds thing about Israel. You're like, we're not in the 1950s anymore. You know, Israel is it's really sad to say, but the American economy is much worse off than the Israeli economy. You know, the Israeli economy, for whatever reason, is doing very well. And the American economy is suffering. So whose help more, ironically? There's some amount of irony in that, I think. Anyway.
I'm sorry, you purchased any of these books?
Am I purchasing these books? No. You sent an email.
I asked if people wanted and there was not much response.
Oh, I said you again.
I gotta read that email.
There's gotta be a full conversation after this
show. Okay, after this show we'll have a full conversation. So, do you guys have? Why don't you share? We share, you have?
It's okay, it's okay, I'll just listen. No,
okay, but it is important. I really feel it's important to follow inside, just because the language is important. Okay.
So, do you need the safer base sheet anymore?
Yeah, well, we're gonna use it. Okay. We're gonna get to it. Hello, Chicane. Okay, 8. He says we have to, there's a value that we're picking up from the beginning of the Hagdama Rishona, and he says that we realize that he said up till now that the Eretz Yisrael has a zchut in and of itself. We spoke about Eretz Yisrael as a living entity last time, and that the land itself has a zchut, it has a merit. And the merit itself can bring about the salvation of the Jewish people, especially in times of great need. Ho'il Shekhen. Oh, I'm sorry, page Kafchet. I don't know, well, you guys have a different one. Ho'il Shekhen, it's the beginning of a paragraph. It's a page into the Hagdama Rishona.
Ho'il Shekhen is the first one.
Yeah, Ho'il Shekhen. It's a page into the Hagdama Rishona. You have the older version, right? The older, the original binding. Now we have the newer binding. Ho'il Shekhen. Ke'et she'anu b'nei Yisrael b'tzara gedola. Since we, the Jewish people, are in great tzara, great pain, great anguish, rachmana litzlan b'mheira, v'tzarot mishtagot al tzavarenu, and the pains are growing on our necks. U'mitchatzot lo rak miyom liyom ela misha'a l'sha'a. And it's not only daily, but hourly, the things get worse, situation gets worse. Im amarti l'staper, lo yaspiku lanu hagilyonot. If I tried to tell you, I wouldn't have enough paper to tell you. V'ani maniach et hasipur hazeh l'kotvei korot hadorot. And I'll leave the stories to the historians.
Can I just say, because I wasn't here last week. When was he writing this?
Oh, this is quite an important detail. Yeah. Okay, he was writing this in Hungary, Budapest, in 1942. He was exiled. He was Rabbi Teichdahl, I'll just repeat, was a leading figure in the Satmar Jewish community, right? He was a rabid anti-Zionist, as most Satmarers were then. After the Nazi onslaught, he at some point did some reevaluation, as he will describe, and came to the conclusion that the Jewish people were guilty of not investing their energies in building up the land of Israel. And that was one of the major contributions to the Holocaust. It's very controversial what he says. Yeah, almost shocking. Right? And therefore, the Jewish people are responsible to build up the land of Israel. He did a 180, complete 180. Okay? And so, and then he wrote a whole book proving it. Right? And the reason we read this book is not just because of the amazingness of his story, but because it's the, I would say, the real original, like, you know, classic work that's going to list so many of the important Jewish sources that relate the importance and the significance of Eretz Yisrael in our religion. But as I mentioned last week, he's writing it not for us. Like, we are not his landsman. You know what I'm saying? He's writing for his own people. And if you recall last week, who does he start with? He starts with a letter from the Balat Tanya to the Berditchever Rebbe. Meaning, he's writing it for his own Hasidim. He's writing for his people. He needs to convince them of how he's right and how they're wrong and how they all made mistakes. And we're going to see that the real tragedy of the story is that he's utterly unsuccessful. Like, they have no interest in hearing what he has to say. They basically think he went off the deep end and he's nuts. Right? And so his story is relegated, his book is relegated to one studied by religious Zionists like us, but completely ignored by the people he intended to write it for.
He also did it without sources, if I recall.
I believe that that's incorrect. There are certain, I think that's an urban legend, because it's quite clear that in Budapest, the Jewish community had the ability to, you know, had certain freedoms. He's in a base medrash. I think he had most of the sources. He will tell you at times that there are certain things he's writing from memory.
Until 44. Did he write in 44? And then 42?
He started 42, but he finished... The Jewish community in Budapest was liquidated in 44. Right, and he was part of that liquidation. Right, he was part of the liquidation. He somehow escaped from Poland to watch his community be utterly decimated, lost most of his family, and of course all of his good friends. He somehow made it to Budapest, where he was, he wrote the book. That's what he did. So, but it's obvious that he had sources. He had some of the original sources, and some of them also, he's clearly brilliant, as will come quite evident. But I think that's a legend, that he wrote the whole thing from memory in a closet. You heard that, right? Right. I don't think it's true. Okay. Vayikar, lididi, so he says, I'm not an historian. The point of this book is not to write history. Vayikar, lididi, lizkor she'anu b'tzara gedola rachmano litzlan. Ve'ein lanu yom she'en ki lelato merubba mechavira. There is no day where the curses are not worse than the day before. Akein b'vadai, therefore, certainly she'anu tzichim ka'et, lizchuta da'artzenu hakadosha, lehageno leinu u'lesharmenu. So we need the zchut of Eretz Yisrael. Remember, the Balat Tanya, just to recall, he said that when I was in prison, I prayed that the merit of Eretz Yisrael should get me out of prison, should save me. So, and he said, this is clearly an idea, that Israel, the land itself, has a merit that saves Jews, that helps Jews in their time of need. And he's quoting here, just the letter from the Balat Tanya, to widen us from our tight constrictedness, ulechaltzenu mimitzar. וכבר סיפרה לנו התורה הקדושה מיעקב אבינו, בשעה שהיה בצרה, נדר נדר גדול לאלוקיו. So now we're going to turn to exactly to the part of Yaakov Avinu that I wanted to relate to. So please turn to Bereshit, Perek Kavchet, the beginning of chapter 28. Bereshit chapter 28. As we all know, what? Kavchet. Bereshit chapter 28. But I want to start from the beginning. Okay, well, it is Pasuk Chaf. Well, one second, we don't have to do the whole dream. Okay, Yaakov Avinu is running away. Where is he running from? We want to just put it in context. Why does he run away from his house? Right, his brother Esav wants to kill him, right? It sounds familiar. This is just a pretense to all of Jewish history. Yaakov runs away, Yaakov's children run away because Esav's descendants want to kill us. Right, so it's a very good example that he's using to illustrate. He's running away, running away, running away. Okay? And he has this dream, obviously, and we all know the dream that Yaakov Avinu has. He sees angels up and down. Then Yaakov wakes up. Okay? Pasuk Ted Zayin. Verse 16 in chapter 28. Vayikatz Yaakov Mishnato. Yaakov woke up. Vayomer. And he says, Achein yesh Hashem b'makom hazeh. Va'anochi lo yadati. Yes. God, there is God in this place, and I didn't know. Which is almost like, where was Yaakov? Where did he have the dream? Arabayit, right? Rashi says he's in Arabayit, and I didn't know. Let's give a drasha on this parsha, on Parshat Vayetze. Because there's an incredibly important Rashi. If you look at Rashi on Yud Zayin, I'm just going to read the next pasuk. Vayira vayomar, mana ra'u makom hazeh. This is an awesome place. Ein zeh ki im beit Elokim v'zeh shara shamayim. This is the house of God. This is the gateway to the heavens. So if you look at Rashi on Ki Im Beit Elohim, okay, so they have a whole discussion of how is it that Yaakov got to Har HaBayit. Because he's going from Beer Sheva, He got to Haran. So Rashi says he went from Beersheba, which is in the south. He arrived all the way in, like, up north. He's somewhere, I don't know, in Beirut maybe. And then he had to come back. That's just the way they describe his journey. So there's a very long Rashi. Skip down probably two-thirds of the way through, a little more than half. There starts with V'im Tomar. And if you will say, Kshavar Yaakov. You can see if you can find it there, if you have the Rashi. See it over there? See it anywhere over there? Look at Rashi.
The next page.
Yeah. It's a long Rashi. Kshavar Yaakov al Beit HaMikdash.
Okay, my habits.
You see it?
Yeah.
Okay. Johnny, any chance?
Not yet?
Here, go over here. Yeah. Right, we'll follow with us, okay? Because the Rashi says the following. V'im Tomar. Kshavar Yaakov al Beit HaMikdash. What happened was Yaakov traveled through Yerushalayim, he passed the Beit HaMikdash, he skipped it.
On the way to Haran.
Well, on the way to Haran, and then only then he realized, and he goes, oh my God, I forgot the Beit HaMikdash, I better go back. Okay? Whoops. Okay? Madua lo ikvu sham. So, I don't understand, if Yaakov Avinu is passing by the Makom HaMikdash, why didn't they stop him there? If God wanted to have a dream there, why didn't they stop him there? So Rashi says an unbelievable thing. Ihu lo yahiv libe. So Rashi says, it's quoting the Midrash, he himself, if he didn't care enough to daven in the place where his forefathers, where his parents davened, umin hashamayim yakvuhu. So you want God to stop you? Meaning Rashi says, why didn't the angels stop him? Why did he have to turn around and come back to Har Habayit to have his dream? So Rashi says, 1 second, if he himself didn't pay enough attention to stop on Har Habayit, you want God to stop him? So I gave a whole drasha once about this. And it was a time, if you recall, remember when the second intifada started? Right? What was the initial flashpoint for the second intifada? That's right. Right, but the flashpoint was that I would suggest this, he knew it, and he therefore intentionally went up. Sharon clearly went up to instigate a fight. Right. So, but what was and if you recall, it was a whole thing about the tunnels underground. Like there was a lot of things that were going around Har Habayit, and it's just so relevant for us today because, as we all know, right, the Palestinians have now issued a report which they then retracted, but didn't retract, claiming that the Kotel HaMa'aravi wasn't actually a Jewish site. It's owned by the Smith family of Syria or something. I don't know what you're familiar with this or report. No, yeah. You didn't hear this. You didn't know this? This is like the ultimate chutzpah that when the government, in some like cabinet decision, not some regular cabinet decision, they said, oh, we're going to invest like 8 million shekel to reassess and to rebuild the Kotel Plaza to allow even more millions of visitors to come. Like, whatever, very nice. So they're going to build it up even more. So, of course, on the Palestinian Authority's official website, out comes an official report by the Minister of, I think, culture or something like that. What?
I think it was culture.
Of culture, the Palestinian culture, informing us that according to Palestinian research, the Kotel is not really a Jewish site at all.
The truth is they're right, but Har Habayit.
So along came Netanyahu, who correctly and said, they don't even think that our places, our Jewish sites, are holy sites. Like they clearly don't want to make peace with us. And I was ticked off at Netanyahu because he should have said, of course the Kotel is a Jewish site, but it's a Jewish site in so much as the fact that it's the retaining wall for the Har Habayit, which is the holiest site in Judaism. But we don't say that anymore. We've already ceded Har Habayit to the Arabs. Like that's a big joke. We always say, when they play on Yom Yerushalayim, they play the whole thing, Har Habayit Biyadeinu. Like, is Har Habayit really Biyadeinu? Jews can't pray there. Right. So I gave a whole drasha about the fact that this whole thing is surrounding Har Habayit and that we do nothing about Har Habayit. And one of my members was so moved that he said, he came up to me after, he goes, if you will come and pray with me on Har Habayit, I'll fly you to Israel right now to do it. And of course I chickened out. But after asking Shiloh, then should we go up? And no, we shouldn't go up, whatever.
Do you hold by going or not?
I have not gone. But I am ashamed of it. Because the people that I respect, the Israeli people that I respect, they don't feel that they should go up. Like they think, but I think that's changing. What? You've been on the trip? I don't deny. I think that's significant. I think it's important. So anyway, that's just a side drasha of Har Habayit. Ihu lo, it's very strong. The Rashi's words always struck me. Ihu lo yahiv libe, litpalel b'makom shitpalu avotav. It speaks to us right now. You don't want to go to the place where your forefathers have been. What, you want God to come down from the heavens and bring down the Hamidash for you? That's really what you want? And what's our answer?
We did in 67.
What? No, we didn't. We went and we captured it. Our Bible, they knew. And then we said to the Arabs, oh, well, here are the keys. Go ahead. You can have them. Anyway, but I digress. So Yaakov Avinu is on the Temple Mount. He says, this is an unbelievable place. Pasuk Yurchet. Vayashkem Yaakov Baboker. He woke in the morning. He took the stone that he placed on his head and he made it into a matzeva, into an altar. And he poured oil on this stone. He called it Beitel, but it says Luz. Very good. Now, we're going to now read Yaakov's oath. Okay? When you make an oath, normally, okay, a conditional oath, every oath has an if, and then, right? Johnny, if you will open your house up to me, then I will come and give a shiur here. Thank you. You did, and I did. Okay? Is that fair? If you will do, any lawyers here? Right? You're a lawyer, right?
No.
Just a businessman. He's a, No,
I meant the wife's a lawyer.
Well, your wife's a lawyer. Right. If you will do X, Y, Z, then I will do A, B, C. That makes sense. Okay? And we have the if here right away. Vaydar Yaakov le'neder le'mor im. If, okay, but I would like you to tell me when the if ends and when the then begins. So you have to follow inside carefully because it's not obvious. You've heard these things
before.
I did
hear you give this to the woman's shear. I listened to it, but I don't remember the answer, so I will not remember this time.
It just so happened that I had learned Ema Barim Sudecha, so it's a parsha. I mean, it was the parsha. Okay. Im yihyeh Elohim imadi. If God will be in my midst. Ushmarani baderech hazeh asher anochi holech. And he will guard me in this place that I'm going. And he gives me clothes to eat, food to eat, and clothes to wear. I'm a pasuk chavaluk now. V'shavti v'shalom al beit avi. V'haya Hashem li l'Elohim. And I will return home in peace to my father's house. And God will be for me a God. V'ha'even hazot asher tzamti matzeva yiyeh beit Elohim. And the stone which I have placed as a matzeva, as an altar, will be a house of God. And everything that you will give me, I will surely tithe to you. So I can tell you definitively that the last phrase, everything that you will give to me, I will surely give a tithe to, that's a then.
Rabbi
Oswald. Well, you cheater. You can't. You understand why Art Squirrel is interpreting.
Yeah.
Right? Because there's no then in the verse. Everyone understand that in Hebrew? What? Hold on. 1 second. Im Elohim Elohimimadi. God will just read it again. Vayda Yaakov Neder Lemor. Im Elohim Imadi. Ushmarani Bederach Hazeh Ashonechei Lech Manach Tani Lechem Leboshu Berem Begachot. Right? This is all part of the if, correct?
The inflection is.
Can we agree that that's all part of the if? Good. Vishavti B'Shalom Abeit Avi. That's the then?
Yeah.
Saying then, if God is with me and supplies me with food and clothing away, then I promise what?
I will come back.
I will come back. And if God is not with me?
This is B'Shalom. I think B'Shalom can still be part of the condition. If I should come back.
But B'Shavti is the inflection to say is where God isn't doing something. This is where he's starting to do something.
B'Shavti B'Shalom El Beit. What do you do with the B'Shalom though? Right.
God
good point.
Peacefully.
Right. Meaning if otherwise I'll come back kicking and screaming? Hard to say. I think that's also part of the condition. Mm-hmm. Okay? You still disagree? What?
Then you should have said Vashevota.
Vashevota. And nobody's saying, and I return to my father's house in peace. Okay, and this is where we get stuck on this phrase. V'haya Hashem li l'Elokim. Is that part of the if, or that's part of the then? And I hate to break it to you, no matter what you say, you're not going to be happy. Why?
I think it's if.
If God will be for me a God. Then, v'ha'even hazot asher matziv matzivah yeh beit Elokim, then I will come back and make this a house of God?
Didn't he say that?
What does it mean that if God will be for me a God?
I think it summarizes all of the above, like, what he's asking.
What do you mean? If?
Like, if you will be a God that will grant me everything above that I'm requesting.
He's saying it's still part of the condition.
It's summarizing everything he's
okay.
Yeah.
That's certainly a good shot. It's unusual to say that if God gives me what I want, then... Yeah. I will consider him my God. But of course, if he doesn't give me what I want, then Right,
but he's making his request to God.
Anyway, what?
Isn't that all a bit strange anyway?
Yeah.
He's just woken up from his sleep and he said, wow, this place is holy.
Yes, correct.
And he says, by the way, but I'm only going to do what you want if you do by right by me.
Yes.
But he's just had this like revelation.
It does seem unusual, doesn't it?
But according to the understanding of the way you actually use verbiage in the Torah, im doesn't necessarily have to mean if at all.
What does it mean?
Im could mean when.
Ooh.
So the Mefarshim, not in this particular case, but the Mefarshim have used the word im to say when.
Oh yeah, let's say with Rashi. Not very often. Pretty rarely.
Possible.
Can you give me one other example? On the top of your head, you can't. Okay, but you're probably right. I think he's right. But im, hold on a second, im. Let's assume you're correct. Okay. Let's look at it inside. Let's look at Rashi inside. Im yeluhimi madi. Says Rashi. Im yishmor li haftachot halalu, shiftachtani liot imadi. Says God, if God keeps his promises that he promised me. So that's clearly an if. According to Rashi? Right, Kevin? I mean, what?
According to Rashi.
Yeah, he's pretty clear. Okay. Ushmarani, he guards me. Kamo sha'amali. Like he said to me. Ushmaticha b'chol eter telech. V'natan li lechem. He gives me bread. Kamo sha'amali. I won't abandon you. Skip to the next Rashi. Vishavti. Kamo sha'amali. As he says, Vashivoticha el ha'adama. God promised to bring me back. So if he brings me back, meaning it's not, like you said, he said, should say Vashivoticha. That's how Rashi reads it. He'll bring me back. Bishalom, what's shalom? Shalem min hachet, that I don't sin. Shelo elmad midarchei Lavan, he said, I don't want to become like Lavan out there in New York. Vaya Hashem li lelokim, sorry, London. God will be for me, it just doesn't matter where. God will be for me a God. What does that mean? Sheyachul shemo alai mitchila v'ad sof, that his name should fall upon me from beginning to end. Shelo yimtza psul bizari. So Rashi clearly says this phrase of God will be a God for me is part of the if. If God will be with me and take care of me and bring me back and place his name on me the entire time. Okay? 1 second. Vahavta, 1 second. Shalem sabas kumosha amar shalibarti lach. Okay? Vehaeven hazot. Look at Rashi and Chapet, Ve'evan Azot, Kach Mufarash, Vav Zo Shal Ve'ha'evan. What's the word of the Vav on this Ve'ha'evan? Im Yaseh Li Et Eile, if God will do for me this, Af Ani E'eseh Zot. Then I will come back and make this Matseva into a house of God. Everybody understand? This doesn't understand Rashi again. He says, if God will be with me, and he gives me the food, and he gives me the clothing, and Vishavti B'Shalom, and V'haya Hashem Li Lelokim. And what does Rashi say God will be a God for me as means? And my children will be Jewish still. Then I will come back. The only problem with Rashi is, you're frowning, you don't have a problem with Rashi? Can anybody tell me the big problem with Rashi? The big problem with Rashi is that he reinterprets the words, V'haya Hashem li lelokim. Right, the words, what does the words, and God will, V'haya Hashem li lelokim, literally mean?
And he will be for me a God.
He will be for me a God. What does Rashi say it means?
I think his name will rest on me.
His name will rest on me that what? That my children will not have a psul. My children will not be defiled. Is that what God will be a God to me means? If you're a God to me, it doesn't mean and my children are all from. It means that you'll be a God to me. So understand what Rashi's doing, and there's a little too inside baseball, but what Rashi's doing is he has to reinterpret that line. Because otherwise it doesn't make sense. What Yaakov's going to come and say, and if God will be a God to me, what does that mean? Mm-hmm. How can Yaakov say, and will God be a God to me? Now let's look at how Rav Teichtal reads that pasuk. Okay, based on his new understanding of the power of Eretz Yisrael. Here he goes. Okay. Sipra lanu et Rav Kedusha miYaakov Avinu Alav HaShalom. B'sha'ash haya b'tzara, when he was in anguish, Nadar neder gadol le'elokav. He swore an oath to God. Kidichtiv vayidar Yaakov neder le'mor. Im yehli imadi. Now that you've seen this. Ushmarani bederech hazeh shenoch anuchi holech. V'natani lechem lechol uveged elbosh. V'shavti v'shalom abeit avi. Chazal amru, my le'mor. Yaakov said, vayidar Yaakov neder le'mor. Say, Mikan sheno dream de'et sara. From this we learn, when a person is in trouble, what does he do?
Takes a vow.
What's that?
Takes a vow.
To what? What does he take a vow?
Water.
What's that? What do you think about when you're in trouble?
God, you'll help me out and I will do this for you.
Right. I mean, it's common. It's very common. It's common knowledge. When people are in trouble, they call out to God and say, God, if you get me out of this trouble, I will, whatever it is, give money to tzedakah.
Is that proper? Is taking on a
nid? That's what Gemara says. There's an appropriate thing to do. Yaakov Avinu did the appropriate thing. I mean, we don't take nidarim ever. Mm-hmm. But only because... I don't know, we're like, why not? What, are you afraid of the consequences? There's a very easy way to get out of the consequences of taking a false oath. And that is?
Before Rosh Hashanah.
What? No.
Live up to you.
Yeah. Whatever you say you're going to do.
Actually do it.
Do it. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's not an option today. Well, how can I get out of it? I didn't really mean it. Well, I don't know, if you said you were going to give the money, maybe you give the money. You know, we say it in Hallel all the time, right? In the Ma'ashim Hashem, Kos Yeshua Asasab Hashem Hashem Ekra. The next verse, Nidarai LaHashem Ashalem Negdana LaCholamo. That whole Hallel is a very, very powerful tefillah, only because it's a journey, in a sense. That part, that the reason why that song resonates with us so powerfully is because it really articulates the tone of that paragraph. Ma, it's very sad. La Hashem, right? Kol Tug Malohi Halai. What happened?
Manna came to major kid.
Because it comes out in joy.
Yeah.
Why? Nidarei La Hashem Ashalem. David HaMelech is saying, I will pay back. Why is David HaMelech making Nidarim? What's that?
Hashem saved him the whole bunch.
From?
Shaul.
Forget Shaul.
From his sorrows.
Right, from mortal death. I mean, we forget that David HaMelech was a warrior, right? And, you know, when you kill thousands of Palestinian soldiers, sooner or later, you're going to have a couple of close calls. And you're going to see some friends die in battle. It just happened. Kos Yeshuat Asa, what's Kos Yeshuot of salvation? Uveshem Hashem Ekra. Nedarai LaHashem HaShalem, Negdana L'chol Amo. Right? Yakar be'enei Hashem, hamavta l'chasidav. Right? Beautiful, yakar, precious in the eyes of God are those who die in His name, chasidav. So, you know what I'm saying? It's a very emotional, very, very powerful prayer. Ana Hashem, ki ani avdecha, ani b'tiyachta l'moserai, l'cha zvech zevach todah. Why am I giving this zevach todah to Hashem? Because I wasn't just killed in this battlefield that I was taking all these oaths to get me out of. Right? Then that's why he's taking this neder. He made this neder, and it's very common. I remember when we were in Shalavim, there was always like that time. It was a very powerful time between Yom HaZikaron and Yom HaAtzmaut. That's one of the days that Israel really gets right. They really understand the power of what Yom HaZikaron is supposed to be, how personal it is, and from the pain of Yom HaZikaron into the joy of Yom HaAtzma'ut. It's a very, very connected idea. So in between those 2 days, there's always that like Bein HaShemashot and Yeshiva, and the Yeshiva would learn Mishnayot, the Zecha Nishmat, those soldiers, the students of the soldiers, were soldiers who had lost their lives in whatever war it was. And then it was just like, there was that time. And so Rabbi Meir Schlesinger, was Rosh Yeshiva at the time, he spoke about like the students who came back from actions. They wanted to know, they would take the darim of how many blot they would learn. You know, when they were in tight spots. And so they wanted to know how many of those blot, if they took an oath, how many would they have to learn? If I recall correctly, I'm pretty sure he said this. He said he thought about half was about right. They didn't have to do all of it. I don't know why he said that. He just kind of felt, you know what I'm saying? But it's natural. When you're under a hell of fire, when you're in trouble, you take an oath. And this is exactly what he's saying. What is Lemor? Mikan shenodim ve'et sarah. And where do we see this from? With Yaakov Avinu, you have to remember, Yaakov Avinu, like, we don't picture him as a person, but think about, here he's, like, in the situation he's in, like, a week ago, he was living with his parents. Okay, 37, I don't know, good, not good, living with his parents. like he's a timid kind of person. All of a sudden, his mother pulls him into this crazy situation. He gets this blessing from his father. Before you know it, his brother's trying to kill him, and his parents are pushing him out the door, saying, "Go live, all, you know, 1,000 miles away." And the midrash takes it, it says explicitly, right? Eliphaz is chasing him, and he steals all his money. And can you imagine, like, what it must be like for this person to be alone, penniless, out in the wilderness, running for your life? You have no idea how you're going to survive. And now you understand why is it Vayidar Yaakov Neder Leimor? Right? How?
But maybe why he didn't remember to go to the basin. I mean,
right, he was the...
No, I mean, seriously.
But that's the original question I had at the time. So he's running for his life. He's not going to stop and start governing because he's running past an important place. He could and he should necessarily. It's a different discussion.
But the interesting thing is he came back.
Well, there's a whole discussion about how that happened.
Right, he had Kitzat HaDerech. Right, exactly, that's true.
But the point is he's fleeing. He's not thinking. He's just going distance as fast as he can.
Right.
That's really frightening, though. He left a significant amount of time after.
How long after?
After Yitzchak gave him the bracha and after Yitzchak gave Esau the bracha, Esau wouldn't have touched him until Yitzchak died.
Mm-hmm.
There was a period of a number of years between the two of them that Rivka told him to leave before Yitzchak passed away.
Really? I was always under the...
He didn't die right after.
No, he didn't die right after, but I was to understand that 14 years of... Like, he spent 14 years in the house of Shem Ve'Aver, but that was after he left his parents' house because he thought...
Yeah.
Right, meaning, because Rivka does say, like, I don't want... Why should I lose both my children on one day? That she really does think that Esav's going to kill him. That was the implication that I got. I don't know. Okay. Kamo Ken, he says, Ani, me, eight Kalal Yisrael b'tzara v'achaman alitzlan. Right, when the B'nai Yisrael are in tzara, v'ani she'orer rani Hashem li'ot t'irei Rabbeinu HaKadosh Balatanya. Apparently this Balatanya was some kind of epiphany for him. You know what I'm saying? God showed me, revealed to me this Balatanya. This chuta de'eretz Yisrael marchiv alana mitzareinu. That the merit of Eretz Yisrael takes us out of our tzara, mechalzenu mi meitzar, kiyamti be'atzmi divrei chazal hanal. He says, I promised to take, I took this oath, shelimdo midvarav shel Yaakov Avinu shenadar be'etzara, shekamo kein ya'aseh kol ba'Yisrael, every Jew should do the same thing, lindor be'etzara, to take a neder in a time of tzara, and dor gam ani neder gadol l'elokei Yisrael. He says, I take the following oath to God, that palel k'tfilat Yaakov Avinu, tfilat Avinu azakein anal b'shem kol Yisrael. Im yeh Elokim imadi b'itot hagzerot hakashot. If God will be with me, and it's so powerful how he's like paraphrasing Yaakov Avinu's words. In this difficult time, u'shmarani shelo yuchlu lahazikli, and he will guard me. V'gam yiten li lechem lechol u'beged l'lbosh. And he will give me clothing to wear, right? And food to eat. And the merit of Eretz Yisrael will protect me. That no damage should come to me or the people of my house. He says, and no damage should happen until the Gula comes to Bei Israel, and I'm in it. He says, and I invoke the merit of Eretz Yisrael to protect us, to save us. And to say to our tzarot, enough. We should fulfill the verse, 7 times the tzaddik will fall, but then he will rise. But the rasha will fall once. Right. Tzeinu HaKadosh Shat Yoreh Zchut Aleinu Levakdeinu Chish Maer Vidvar Yeshua V'Rachamim, and our land should arise, its raise up to awaken its merit, right, to salve for salvation. Kikvar Kashel Koach HaSevel. He says, because our patience is gone. Kashel Koach HaSevel. The ability to wait any longer is weakening. Umi Yitein Shiyu HaYisurim Halalu Sharvu Aleinu B'Meshach HaShanim HaChornot. Halavai, that these Yisurim that we have felt should be Yisurei Dechevle Mashiach. They should be the Yisurim. You've heard of that phrase? The birth pangs of the Mashiach? Right?
Yeah.
Right. There's a very famous idea, right? That every great, that the redemption will come with the birth pangs. Chevle Mashiach. It's from the Navi, really. V'yavo Mashiach tikenu yigalenu miyadam. And Mashiach should come and redeem us. Aval enadat ma'aratzona b'rei bibiyat Mashiach. We don't know how it's going to happen. Ki liba lepuma lo gaya. God never told anybody how the Mashiach is going to come. Va'ofen biyato ech tiyehu ne'ala mikol chai. No one knows how he's going to come. Ki mivu'ar bidrashot taran. You can look it up. What the Ran wrote in his drashos. Shekamosh lo noda zman biyato. Just like we don't know when Mashiach will come. Kein lo noda ofen biyato ech yeh. We also don't know how he will come. And this is going to be very important. Just until now, I will just ask you, if you were to ask any Jew in 1927, describe to me the coming of the Messiah, what would he tell you?
The guy riding on a donkey.
What?
The guy riding on a donkey.
Yeah, that's correct. How did the Jews get to the Holy Land? What?
Wings of eagles.
And you mean that in what sense?
And God will bring them.
How?
Miraculously.
Like, throughout all of history, Jews believed that the Messiah would come through in a miraculous way. And I would say that many Jews still think this.
Sure.
Right? Yeah. How's the Mashiach going to come? It's got to take a miracle. What do you mean a miracle? Literally a miracle. I mean, you know, transporter beams, real eagles. When they say on the wings of eagles, what do they mean? They're not talking about what?
Big eagles.
Right. I mean, to be honest with you, for most of history, you know, since the Navi said those words, people had this idea like the Flintstones, you know, remember the Flint airplanes and the Flintstones? You know, like you had this huge bird and the big thing on the back of the bird.
If you're in wherever it is, Ethiopia, and these big birds arrive in the middle of the night, that's and you're stuck in the back. And you just arrived in Eretz Israel, you would see it as a pretty darn close version of the look. You're not going to, like, it's these, all the actions Israel is slowly performing for even non-Jews around the world, they're pretty close to these Nevuot.
Are you telling me that the modern day state of Israel is the fulfillment of the Messianic era?
I'm saying it's the start of the birth pangs of the Mashiach.
I think you're putting words into his mouth.
I just reinterpreted what he said.
The start of the birth pangs is never definable as like that instant start.
Can I ask you a question? Why are you so reluctant to say yes?
Because there's no proof and it's not categorical and it's not the...
In your own.
What?
It's implied.
I'm asking you. Why don't you say...
I mean, I'm not some gadol that can put a spot on the finger or the date or whatever else. I'm just saying that I'm looking...
If you looked at it objectively... Would you seem to say that this would seem to fulfill many of the messianic prophecies?
The last 50 years, there are numerous points that would say there are miraculous events taking place.
Well, no. Miraculous events taking place or prophesied events taking place?
Miraculous events that have had huge...
Wait, name me a miracle.
They will not teach any of Israeli military strategy in the majority of the major military schools around the world. Why? Because they are completely and utterly physically impossible.
Miracle?
Yes. They are miraculous victories on the field of battle. There is no way that these things could happen with any sensible behavior.
Again.
It's been done. American generals will stand up and answer to Israeli generals or general questioning why they do not teach a single Israeli war. Because they teach everything, walk through historical battles back to whenever. They will not teach Israeli because the way the Six Day War was won, the Yom Kippur was won, it was just not practical.
I don't know the Yom Kippur one because I know that one makes no sense. That one makes no sense. Six Day War seems to make a lot of sense. Yeah, if you destroy your enemy's air force when they're on the ground.
They're walking their way through the country, they're going to stop.
In the Yom Kippur war, correct. In the Yom Kippur war, yes. Again. I ask you again, point to the miracle. This is a key point. It's a very important point. You're using the term miraculous to describe an incredulous behavior on the part of the enemy of the Jews. Correct?
Because I don't think it was organized in such a way that the Syrian army decided to do this at this point with a serious intent. It was meant to happen. There was a larger force at play that controlled absurd behaviors on a number of ways.
Okay, but we're playing with semantics, but I'm not hacking you for no reason. You understand? The reason I'm asking you is, you can't. How do we define the term miracle?
Well, the Derech Eretz is the concealment of God.
Correct.
Above nature is an open revelation
Correct.
Of God, but they're both God. So you could have God operating the Derech Eretz, so it's a number of what we call hashkacha pratis.
Will we call that miraculous?
No.
Right.
Because it's not an open.
Do you understand?
Hand.
Exactly.
That's
it's all,
not
that's
a suspension
all
of the laws.
I'm not going to argue with you about the divine influence on, you know, on Syrian tank movements on the Golan Heights in the in the Yom Kippur War. I think that either they're miraculously stupid or somehow God put into their heads, hey, let's stop before we get to the Kinneret, because why would we want to go control the Kinneret? You know what I'm saying? Like, I would agree with you, but a miracle would happen if, I don't know, somehow all of their tanks flew up in the air and were thrown about like matchbox cars. What?
Or melted.
Or melted. That would be cool. Cool melted Syrian tanks.
That's also a physical possibility.
What?
That's happened.
Okay, I want it to be done with physical impossibility. I want it to be done. You know what I'm saying? That people expect the Mashiach to come. Jews have always expected the Mashiach to come, not by some Syrian miscommunication. That almost seems to like that's like cheap. That's what you're asking for. I mean, really? You want like the Syrians to what? Yeah. I mean, if Mashiach is gonna come, I mean, you know.
Light show.
Right, don't you think? Isn't that the way you visioned it?
That is pretty darn close. I mean, maybe played on and everyone's making fun of it, but it's pretty darn close to being in that situation. You are basically been defeated and poof, you're not. It's pretty darn close.
We are.
It doesn't have laser beams and everyone's standing gawping at it necessarily because it's in the heat of a battle.
Uh-huh.
It's pretty close.
Sharon did not become an observant man. I don't know, the miracles make you observant, but there's the people who believe that, you know, the Israeli might and wit won the war. Even though it wrote Israel.
The reason I point this out is because what he asks for is that these should be the Chevelei Mashiach. We don't know how it's going to come. He says, Im yeh b'derech neis nigle, o neis nistar milubash miteva. He just throws it out there. But understand how controversial that statement is in those days and in those times. You're already looking at this with 50 years of hindsight. Now along comes somebody who there is no Israel, there is no nation, there is no country. The Jews are getting decimated. And he says, no, it doesn't have to be miraculous. It could just be derech hateva. It could be through natural means too.
How much of a great big neder is this, right? You're right. He's sitting in 42 in Budapest. He knows the Jews are getting killed all over the place. Mm-hmm. And then he knows that Budapest is next.
Yeah.
And he's saying, okay, God, if you protect me and you stop this.
Yeah. And the merit of Israel protects me.
And the merit of Israel protects me, even though Israel's not there as a land yet. And most people.
No, it's there as a land.
Well, okay.
He, that's his point, though. The very existence of the land of Israel has a zchut.
Right.
Yes, as such.
But like, okay.
Well, you didn't get to the
venue. I'm looking at hindsight as well, because I know what happened to him next, but it's like, seriously, is he thinking that the... Okay, I'm answering.
You finish your question, yeah. That's going to help him?
You just... okay.
Apparently he is.
So we've had 3 years of war, and him making this neder, he's got the power to say that Hashem's going to stop this 3 years of war.
Hold
now.
On, wait 1 second.
And
okay.
Just because he's making this neder.
Let's finish his neder, and then we'll go back to your question.
Okay.
Im chas v'shalom, achak lo tatzarot. If God forbid, when the tzarot are ended, v'af echiv Hashem lanu, oti takev chas v'shalom, b'yot Mashiach, Mashiach still hasn't come, ad eit sheleb ritzono yitbarach ha-shal cholanu, until he wants to send him, azai, akabel alai b'neder, you have to say where the neder is, I promise, kemo ha-neder sh'yakob avinu, v'chaber sefer, tekef, achar sh'yachiv Hashem lanu mitzara, I promise to write a book, immediately after we get out of this, sefer anogia l'chvoda l'eretz Yisrael. A book that is connected to the honor of the land of Israel, lechapes bezchuta, to find her merits, leromem karna bechavod, to raise up her horn in honor, ulaharo lifnei kol eid kama achiyuv aleinu, how much we are obligated, livnota, to build it, ushachlila. Anybody have English here? I don't know what the word the shachlila means. Are you following the English or you're not following? Okay. Ulekonena alyon, and to raise it up, ulharima me'afara, and to raise it from the dust. V'shekol echad Yisrael yishtadel bebinyan arzenu akdosha. Every Jewish person has to make an effort to build up our holy land. V'shebazet tuluya kol geulatenu. He says, and this is like an unbelievable. Like if you had your own books, I would say underline this line. Shebazeh tuluya kol guluyotenu. You want the redemption to come? What do you have to do?
Let me write this book.
Come here and live in Israel.
You have to, right? You have to
come and live in Israel.
Build. He didn't say Israel. That. Build the land of Israel.
What's the neder that he's taking?
The netter is?
Well, he says, if Hashem does this for me, then I'll write this book.
I'll write my book.
If Hashem doesn't do this for me, I'll write the book anyway. So
well, he did it anyway before he died. God did it for him.
Yeah.
He promises to write a book.
Okay.
Well, what's the best way of getting your netter fulfilled? Is to start fulfilling it before...
But do you think on his way, he didn't make it through. Do you think on his way he would have changed his mind?
He made, obviously, ironically, he finished the book.
He finished the book, but he didn't make it through the war.
And he died at the very end of the war, you know. Right.
Mm-hmm. Or that was his net, it was to do the books.
Right.
It's not really an honor.
Then you can say, I mean, who are we to say? Let's be honest.
He fulfilled his net, and he's not of no use anymore.
What could you possibly do? Yeah. What could a person like this possibly do? You're so helpless and powerless. Like, even like we said, we started with this thing about the, what do we do about the fire? You know, I don't want to help the people, but I'm not in a position, I don't have a super tanker, I'm not in the government. Like, there's really not much for me to do. You go on with your life and you know, you help as much as you can. Right? I mean, do you feel like, I think that it's almost like hubris to think that you could solve every problem. You know, there are people whose jobs it is to solve this problem. You know, and I'm not one of them, in a sense. So that's okay. Like here, you see his almost his desperation. What's he supposed to do? You know, maybe what we should be doing is taking the Darim. That you know, Hashem, if you stop the fire, and you know what I mean. I don't know. Wouldn't be so bad. Take on additional responsibilities if you feel that connected. And he says, and I want to finish that paragraph. I got to finish this idea because we learned the whole thing. The Eretz Yisrael she aim shel ha'umah Yisraelit, and Eretz Yisrael who is the mother of the Jewish nation. Kidim b'vuar b'Yerushalmi. Megagaat umamtenet aleinu b'chilyon einayim. The mother, the mama, is waiting for us. Shenasim libenu aleha, that we should put our eyes upon her. Lekonana uliyasta, to prepare her and to make a foundation in her. Ulharim chomote al dega lakavon, to raise up her walls. Kulanu migdoleinu v'ad taininu, from the big to the small. What is the mother waiting for? She's waiting for us to build her up again. This is what's going to be in my book. In honor of God. And in this merit, so Hashem should protect all those people in tzara, in pain, in anguish. Me too. And I will pray to God. He will guard me from the dangers. You have to understand, like, disease was death. Right, no food is death. You walk outside, there's death everywhere. It's so dangerous. It's unbelievable. And they should have no control over me. And the merit of the land of Israel, that I feel her honor for, I should be able to fulfill my neder. Bimheira biyameinu amein kein yamar Hashem. Says Yaakov took a neder, he took an oath, I take an oath.
Who else at this time was pushing this thing?
Because what?
The Zionists at that time were all
zero
from.
Right. Oh, wait. So this is completely. Did we go into this last week? Did we discuss this last week? The Zionists versus the. I think we discussed it last week.
No, the
right?
Zionists were all non from, all kinds,
correct,
etc. Et
correct. What?
So, no other Rabbanim were...
No, Tamar Rabbanim. No, there were was religious...
The first Yeshuv was Dati.
The old Yeshuv,
yeah,
was very anti-Zionist. The idea of the old Yeshuv, the idea they lived in Yerushalayim, the old city. They were supported by the community in Russia or Poland or whatever. They did not support the idea that they should go out and start planting fields. They were very much against
it. They began the move to return to the land. I mean, that's why they were
very, very sporadically.
The previous 30 years or so, all the Zionist movements are completely on front.
Right. I think we discussed it last week, but we have just to go into it. It's very interesting to note that the reason, one of the reasons why the religious establishment was so anti-Zionist was because Zionism represented a way of expressing Judaism without the need to actually do anything Jewish. You could be Jewish, and you didn't have to actually be religious. And they saw this. Most rabbis saw Zionism as a direct threat to a Jewish way of life. And they rejected it completely. So Rav Teichel, you have to understand, is what he's talking about is literally like fear. You understand what I'm saying? Meaning?
No, and I'd say, because I used to work in Budapest quite a lot, so I know the ghetto there and everything. I can't. You've been there as well. I mean, I think I can't believe in, like, you know, writing this thing.
What?
Imagining him
in this ghetto. Really?
Yeah, I guess.
So Polish Jew in the Budapest too, like he didn't have a place. Okay, now he's going to explain how he read that pasuk. Let's just we'll finish up with this. Uka'et? No, we'll finish up. Nira li shezer bi'atzmo aya neder Yaakov avinu ba'et zarato. This was Yaakov's neder. Remember, we had the problem. What is bishali b'shalom v'ayah Hashem li lelokim? The yashuv le'eretz Yisrael v'yarbe b'chvoda. Remember, he said, and I will return to God, and we're stuck on this part. V'ayah Hashem li lelokim. God will be my God. That's part of the condition or part of the promise. So he says, "V'ratzaba zeh." This is what he meant. Le'orer zchuta de'eretz Yisrael alav be'etz aratel. Here he's in trouble. So what's going to bring him back? What's going to bring him this merit? Eretz Yisrael lechaltzomi me'mitzar. V'zeh shamar b'nidur. This is what he said. V'shavti b'shalom el beit avi. If I return to my father's house, v'haya Hashem li lelokim, and then God will be a God for me. V'hach and this v'shavti b'shalom el beit avi haya haneder be'atzmo. He says, this is the oath. The oath is, and I will return to my father's house. And based on this, we can explain the question of the commentators. What did Yaakov, God will be a God for you? Doesn't make any sense. Does it make any sense that Yaakov would say, if I come back, then you'll be a God for me. And if I don't come back, you won't be a God for me. Doesn't make any sense, right? No, he says. But based on what we said now, it makes a lot of sense. Yadua ma'amar chazal. This is very important ma'amar chazal. Maybe you heard it before. Kol hadar be'eretz Yisrael, demek kemi sheyesh lo eloha. B'chol hadar b'chutz la'aretz, kemi she'en lo eloha. Right? It's very easy to read it when you're here. When you're not living in Israel, it's much harder to read this this phrase. The Gemara says as follows. This is a direct quote from the Gemara in Ksubos. One who lives in Israel, it's as if he has a God. Mm-hmm. And one who doesn't live in Israel, it's as if he has no God. Mm-hmm. I say again, it's easier to quote this Gemara. I learned living here than it is not to live here, but that's what we live here. V'zehu she'amar Yaakov. Yaakov said, "V'haya ashavti b'shalom abeit avi." If I come back in peace to my father's house, if I return to Eretz Yisrael, then what? V'haya Hashem li lelokim. The experience, the religious experience of being a Jewish person, of being a God-fearing person, is fundamentally altered by being in the land of Israel. Hainu, sheyashuv le'eretz Yisrael, when I return to Israel, ve'az yiyeh Hashem lo le'elokim. Then God will be for him a God. Ve'zeh ba'atzmo haya haneder, that was his oath. It's not like Rashi says, and if you return me. He says, no, the oath is, if you protect me in Galut, then I promise to come back. And when I come back, then the relationship that I have with God is fundamentally different than the relationship I would have when God is not here.
So he switches the then.
Yes.
Like one phrase before.
To v'shavti b'shalom abeit avi. Then I will return home, and because I return home to Eretz Yisrael, God will be my God. And it's fundamentally different than otherwise it would have been. The question we have to ask ourselves, and we'll leave ourselves with, is, what do we do? How are we supposed to understand this phrase of kol hadar be'eretz Yisrael kamishi yesh lo eloha, kol hadar b'chutz la'aretz kamishi ein lo eloha? And obviously you have a spectrum of choice. You can either take that literally, meaning the more literally you want to, as if, and then you really very much denigrate the religious experience outside of Eretz Yisrael, or you take it more symbolically. But no matter what you do, it's a very, very, how should we say it? It's a very, very harsh and difficult Gemara, Chazal, for the diaspora Jew. Right, what do you do with the Hakol Adar B'chutz La'aretz K'misha Ein Lo Eloha? Like, how are we supposed to understand that? What was the Gemara trying to convey? Why? Let me ask it this way. Why is it so important to live in Israel? Why can't you be a good Jew living in...
There's also running the Gemara. The Gemara was not written in Israel as well.
Well, I think that it has to all do with the purpose of redemption from Mitzrayim, which was to create a nation that would lead the world in redemption. And in order to do that, there had to be a process of development that could only take place in Eretz Yisrael that required the temple functioning. And through that, the other nations would become uplifted eventually, and everyone would return to Gan Eden. So as long as we're outside of Eretz Yisrael, that's not happening.
Right, but that's not what it says. It says each individual who lives in Eretz Yisrael is as if he has a God. And each individual who does not live in Eretz Yisrael is as if he has no God. Implying what? Implying somehow I mean, you somehow...
The guys in Chutz Lahar is wasting their time.
Yeah. But, and that when you live in Eretz Yisrael, you have a much clearer, much more direct, much more tangible relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam. I mean, I don't know about you. I don't personally... You feel it? What? Tangibly? I mean, you guys go back and forth much more than I do. So it's hard to remember.
Ramban said it's just practice outside the country.
Yes, well, the Ramban doesn't say that. He's just quoting the Gemara.
Says what?
It's just practice. The dream outside the country.
We'll get to that too. We'll get to that too. But he says it, you know, he says it directly, and that's how he understands this section from Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov Avinu himself felt it. He's leaving Eretz Yisrael, and then God, if God is with me, like almost to the point where Yaakov Avinu wondered, is God going to be with me when I leave Eretz Yisrael?
But is this reference to Eretz Yisrael, the kingdom of Israel, or is it just the land, whether the Jews are controlling it or not?
Land.
Just the land.
Just the land.
Uh-huh.
That was awesome.
Yeah, just this place, yeah?
We talked about the whole idea of the Nailotim boat.
We'll get to there, too. You know, what's so interesting to me also is that Rav Teichdal, he spent his whole adult life like teaching and learning. And he was never interested in this topic per se. And then all of a sudden, like, his eyes opened to this idea, and he sees it everywhere. You know what I'm saying? That it, and that, like, it was, Eretz Yisrael was not important to him. And then all of a sudden, like, he decides in the Holocaust or whatever's going on, and we have to awaken ourselves to Eretz Yisrael, and lo and behold, what do you know? Like, I'm going to take an oath, and it's so important, it's critical, and I think we're all like that sometimes. That, you know, all of a sudden some issue is important to you, and you begin to see it everywhere.
That's what I was nodding, and before being here, I didn't have Law wants me to be here, and it's totally right. And it's a very strange entity to live it rather than try and think about it.
I'd agree with that.
Start with the armchair science.
I'd agree with that. Really, not that law made me come in there.
Law did make you come?
No, but I was never a big Zionist geezer, okay? So we came for whatever reasons. Mine was the food, I'll admit that.
You came here for the food?
Yeah, I came for the food. After being in Melbourne.
Okay. I mean,
but
the restaurant.
Seriously, it is completely different now when you go outside of Israel. I don't know, John. If you're going outside Israel and you go to a shul and stuff like that,
yeah,
it's like not the same.
Right. I just felt it for the first time. This past 2 weeks ago, I felt a lack in the Shekhinah.
Really?
I never even thought about it. Like, it just never wasn't a conversation. I was like psyched to go to my restaurants in New York City and see my family. But like, I was there and I felt a tangible lack for whatever reason.
Okay. So anyway, I didn't get here because of those, like, I got here the opposite way. That me, it was much more like cerebral. We did learn about it. I was, like, I had been educated in all this stuff. And then, because of that, then there was this, you feel this internal cognitive dissonance between, like, I believed the things that he writes to be true. Like, the Gemara says it. You know, Eretz Yisrael is a tangible part of what it means to be a Jew. Mm. And here I am, like, you know, preaching about it and all that. And, like, maybe I should probably, you know, do something about it.
Should be on the soapbox.
What?
Gotta be
I was on my soapbox for quite a while.
Yeah.
And then I got off my soapbox and left.
Right. It's hard to be on the soapbox.
What? You know, I mean...
Well, you keep people...
So it's interesting that we came from the other side. Like, I didn't come because I felt like and they needed this talent. Like, I don't know. I'm not... lackingly so. I don't feel the shechina, as it were.
Right.
I should try more.
Not to put myself on.
No, it's quite all right. You know, I think everybody comes at it from a different point.
Right.
You know, but I think that Gemara that we talked about is definitely a much more, I would say, spiritual Gemara.